I was at La Sierra last night for the graduation. And we have some wonderful young people graduating. Maybe we can mention that real quickly. I saw Brian Navarro here this morning, graduated from Walla Walla last week. This weekend, we have Sheridan Jackson graduating up at PUC. We have Angel Hernandez. These are all mission trip people. We have Aaron Monroe, staying on our praise team many times up at PUC graduating. That's not been a quick thing, so good for Aaron. This weekend, we have Samantha Sumil is at La Sierra. Sataida Tamifuna graduating. I saw her last night. So we're proud of all the young people that are moving through this. Pastor Sam Lenore had the message, always fantastic. But just began to make me reminisce. I called him into ministry. I remember the night we all went to South Africa. I took the whole staff. We did camp meeting, Easter weekend, place down there. And they took us all to a game park called Palanusburg Game Park. Fantastic. We went at night. So we're in this open-air truck, and we're driving across. I have a picture, if you can move it down. There's a little picture of a game park truck. No? Anyway, maybe the slideshow's not working. And it's freezing cold. We're at 3,000-4,000 feet, and we're trying to find animals, and there are rhinos and zebras and giraffes and elephants and all kinds of animals. And all of a sudden, the truck dies. Just think about this. We are miles away from anywhere. There were no cell phones anywhere. There was no light. There were no street lights. There's no moon. There is nothing. And he is there trying to start the truck, and the truck is not starting. And you begin to think, what are we going to do out here in the pitch dark, surrounded by lions and tigers and leopards and snakes and crocodiles and other terrible things? And we're in an open-air truck, and it's freezing cold, and we can't stay here. And we're going to get in a line, and we're going to walk in the dark many miles back to where the lodge is. And all I know is I am not going to be the one in front. Right? And you can just imagine, you're going along, and you step on a lion's tail, and a lion roars, sorry, 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 sorry. And you try to go and make it through all the lions and animals until you get back to the lodge. And I began to pray and say, God, we are pastors, God. We are Adventist pastors, God, here speaking for camp meeting. We cannot die like this. We pay tithe every week, God. And the truck started. Yes. And we made it back. And Israel in this story today are standing on the banks of the Jordan River. And they're looking over the river and they can see the giants and the walled cities. And they don't want to go. They do not want to go through. They want to go to the promised land, but they do not want to deal with the giants. Enough giants already, God. And they want to stay there on the bank. Someone told me about an Adventist pastor last week who they're having a series where everyone can write in an anonymous note, I would like to hear a sermon about. And last week the sermon was about why don't Adventist preachers preach more about Daniel and Revelation and the prophecies and last day events. And I guess the pastor got up and said, to be honest, it's because we grew up scared to death of the beasts. And so we don't preach it as much as we used to. But Revelation is full of the beasts. You cannot get to heaven unless you go through the book of Revelation. And you have to deal with the four horsemen and the beasts of Revelation 13 and 17. There are giants we have to go through to get to the promised land. I was going through the reception last night, seeing all the different kids that I've known who have graduated. And one of the girls came over to me. She has sung here on our stage, Susanna Leva, brother Sergio. Fantastic talent. And so I said to her, what are you going to do next? She says, I have a scholarship to go to the University of Rutgers back east to do master's in opera. And she says, Pastor Dan, pray for me because I'm scared to death. Now she's been in an Adventist cocoon. Her parents are there. And now she's going to go into the world of giants. And she's scared. I said, what are you afraid of? She said, I'm afraid that I'll lose my way, that I'll lose my faith. I won't be around church. I won't be around my family. And as I get into the secular world, will I lose my faith? And will I lose my center as a musician in the world? And we had talked about it. And then I prayed for her, put my arms on her shoulder, and prayed that God would keep her faithful to God as she goes out into the world of giants. And in the olden days, the knights had to go through a gauntlet. They would put up this gauntlet with all these saws and wheels banging around. And the knight would have to go through all of them if he wanted to get a kiss from the princess. And finally, one was able to do it. But the Bible is pretty clear that if you want to get to the promised land, there's going to be some giant you got to get through, some beast in Revelation. I was a pastor at 40 years old. And lots of people have heard this around the world as I have talked about being an impact player. I listened to the radio one night with Bill Hybels preaching this great sermon that God is looking for impact players. Players who are willing to do something great for God, who are not satisfied to be sitting in the pew, pay tithes, sing a stand-up, sit down, give a little dollar in the plate, and go home. God is looking for impact players for him. And I went home that night on fire, and I knelt down before God, and half my life is gone. I got one half left. I said, God, help me be an impact player for God. And whatever I have done in the last 25 years has been basically because of that night. Wish I could have done more. But I have come to this place in my life where I find that I am standing on the banks of the river. And I know that God has more challenges for me. You ought to hear my generation. We get together. Talked to Dwight Nelson the other day at Andrews. What are you going to do, Dwight? Turned 65 last month. He says, I'm looking for one more challenge. Jerry West just went to the Clippers today, 79 years old. He said, I'm looking for one more challenge. And I know that God has another challenge for me. There's more giants to kill, more promised land to claim. But it's tempting to just stand on the banks and say, I don't think I want to fight any more giants. I don't think I want to cross any more rivers. I don't want to have to take on any more politics, any more issues. Let me just live on whatever I've done before. I'm tired. I don't want to deal with any more giants. And you stand there on the banks of the river. And you have to decide what you're going to do. It's tempting. I thought of the story of Michael Phelps, the swimmer. Have you heard he's going to have a race with a shark now? But if you know the story when he was going for the 8 gold medals and 1 Olympics, and it came down to probably the one that was the closest, going to be the closest one. These are hundreds of seconds. And he is behind the whole race, and he begins to catch up. And he's 10 feet away from the wall, and he knows that he has to make a choice because he's at the end of a stroke. And he either has to glide and hope he touches first, or he needs to go for another stroke. And it's tempting to glide, but he said, I added another half stroke. And he touched out the wall 1/100th of a second ahead of the other one and kept his streak intact for the 8 gold medals. And I hear the voice in my head saying, just glide, Pastor Dave, just glide. Just glide for the end. Cruise for home. Live on whatever you've done. Enough already. You've done this and that. It's enough already. Don't go fight anymore, John. You don't have to cross any more rivers. Just be done. And here is the message from this story. And Pastor Sarah said, Pastor Dan, why don't we do a series on Joshua and Judges? And I said, let's go back. I preached bits and pieces of Joshua and Judges for many years. But let's go back. I need to hear it myself. And hear the stories of how God went in there and did it to Jericho and his Gideon and these other giants of the Bible. As I stand on the banks trying to decide, can I gather up the courage and the resources to go kill a few more giants for God, claim some more promised land territory for God? The story really starts with the 12 spies. You're coming up to the Jordan River the first time around, and God says, send some spies in. For 40 days, they go, And they come back, and you know the story, Numbers chapter 13. And the 10 spies say, it's a beautiful land, yes, and it's a land flowing with milk and honey, yes, and here are the grapes to prove it. But then it says, we can't attack these people. They are stronger than we are, and we seem like grasshoppers in their eyes. There's giants in the land. And Caleb and Joshua just go crazy. They said, no. It doesn't matter if they are giants. God said he is going to give us his land. This is God's promised land. He says, I will give it to you. I will fight for you. You will not have to fight because I am giving it to you. Just go on over and I'll give it to you. We are well able to take over this land. And they don't go. Do not be afraid of them, Deuteronomy says. The Lord will fight for you. Our God is bigger than their giants. There's all kinds of giants. Whatever is kind of getting in the way of your promised land. It could be cleaning out the garage. And you just can't seem to ever get to it because it's hard. It could be paying your taxes. It could be some health issue that you just don't want to have to face and go deal with it. And it's a giant. It can be a test at school. It can be passing your nursing boards. It could be the MCAT. It can be paying off a debt that you owe somewhere. It can be a relational issue. It could be politics at work. It can be a habit that you can't seem to get over. And it's just on you. I need a change. And one way or the other, there are giants. And so it's tempting to stay on the banks of the river and just say, I don't want to go over. There's giants over there. Let me stay here. And I hear the temptation in my head. The same temptation that came to Jesus when Satan came to him there in the garden to say, just go home. You've already done enough. You came down from heaven. You taught them. You showed them. You're enough already. Go home. You do not want to go through this cross. You don't want to go through the nails and the whip. You don't want to do this. It's enough already. Just go home. Just go back. It's enough. But then I hear the other voice that's saying, no, there's a promised land. You're not in the promised land yet, Pastor Dan. There is still more promised land for you to do. And I will give it again. There was the voice that says, do you really think that the God who opened up the Red Sea and made axe heads float to the top of the river and made the walls of Jericho come tumbling down, do you really believe that God can't do it anymore? Those giants are nothing to God. Go on over and cross over and claim your promised land. And there's the battle of the voices in your head. Do you have it in you? Are you standing on the banks of a river? Not sure whether you want to go and fight the giants. Do you tend to be part of the 10 spies who really most of the time don't want to go try anything new? Don't try anything big. Don't stir the pot. Don't wrestle with anything. Just leave well enough alone and just stay where you are. And they really have kind of taken God out of the picture. These are not bad people. These are God people. These are good people. These are people who left Egypt. They are not there anymore. They are following the cloud. They are following the pillar of fire. They are followers of God. But God, what they've done is all in the past. There's no God of the future. And when they see the giants, the God is not in that picture. And all they see are the giants. Or are you part of the two spies that say, God is going to give us this land. God is bigger than the giants. Which one are you with? And now God sends a message to Joshua. And he tells Joshua to stand in front of the crowd and say to them, cross on over. There is your promised land. You cannot go back to Egypt. I hear your whispering. You cannot go back to Egypt. That is slavery. I did not make you to be slaves. I made you in my image to claim your promised land. Go on over. I am giving you this land. You will not have to fight a battle. I will do all the fighting for you. All you have to do is march and play your trumpets, and I will do all the rest. Go on across. And God has a promised land for every one of you. It's not just mansions up in heaven someday that is the promised land. God has a promised land for you. A place that he wants you to claim, that is your destiny, that he wants you to accomplish. I don't know if you're there or if you're standing on the banks of the river. You know that there's something more, bigger that you ought to be doing. But there's giants between you and that promised land. And so you don't do the hard thing. You don't take that class. You don't let this go. You don't try for the other. You don't ask her out. You don't try. You're standing on the banks. And God says, go on over. Go on over. I will give it to you. And then comes the famous thing. A thousand sermons have been preached on this. God tells Joshua, when you get to the water, as soon as the priest's feet touch the water, the river will stand up like a wall. They say that in the research, this is not like we had in the Philippines, where you can go 500 feet and it's only a foot or two deep. This is maybe 15 or 20 feet deep. And they were going to come to the edge, and he tells these priests, step in. Step in. And God will open it up for you. And John Ortberg, when preaching on this, he says, I think these guys who were carrying the ark probably said, I think I was in the front yesterday. You go front now. You step in. But most of us say to God, no, God, you open up the dry land, and then I will step through. And God says, no, you step first. You go first. And then I'll open it up for you. We say to God, you give me more time. And if you give me more time, then I'll read the Bible more. God, you give me a little more money, and then I'll be better about my tithes and offerings. You help me win the lottery, and then I will give to many projects, God. I'll take care of Brazil. I'll take care of all of it. If you'll just help me win the lottery. God, if you could just make things more obvious, then I will never doubt again. If you make it more obvious, then I'll follow you. God says, no, you step in, and then I'll make it more clear. God, you just changed my wife, and then I'll be better to her, and I'll honor the way I'm supposed to. You change her first, God. And then the Bible says, no, you step first. You take care of my kids, God. If you just change my kids, and my kids would just be better kids. Look at these awful kids you gave me, God. Then I'll be a better father. No, you step in. And I have asked God to open it up the way 100,000 times in my life. Every time someone hands me another request, say, Pastor Dan, can you build this church or go do this project? Can you come over to my place and do evangelism? I want to say, God, you first. You open up the land. You send me the money. And then I will step in. Never one time. Every time he says, you step in, Dan, you make the commitment, you start, and then the ground opens up. You first. Give me the signs of the times, God, when I can really see that the end of the world is coming, then I'll get excited about God. Let me see the Sunday law, then I'll know for sure that we're on the right track, God. Then I'll step in. And God says, no, you first. You first, and then I'll open up the land for you, and I will drive out all the giants. But you step in first. Make the commitment. I'm going to give you three or four steps that I think are just practical things you can do. These are things, some of them I teach in ethics class. I just finished this week another group. A couple of them are here. What things you can do when you are facing giants that just seem hard, that you don't want to tackle, you want to stay on the banks of the river, and you don't want to cross over and deal with the giants. There's a famous one that is called Eat the Frog. Have you heard this one before? Eat the Frog. It's a famous, famous one. Which is the idea that if you have all your things to do, start at the top, You begin to list all your things. What do most of us do? Start with the small one, the easy ones, and we begin to tick them off. But we never seem to get to the sticky one, the hard one that's going to be really hard, the giant that is keeping you from your promised land. It's going to take some time. It's complicated. It's complex. It's hard to figure it out. It's going to hurt some people. You're going to have to muck into some things that are hard. And this theology says, eat the frog. No one wants to eat the frog. Eat the frog first. When you get up in the morning, eat the frog first. Do the hard thing, the big thing, right away. And then you can rest, get it out of the way, and you finally are past it. And that giant is gone, and you can claim more of your promised land. Then when you are tired, you can do all the little easy things to finish up. Eat the frog. Number two, begin with the end in mind to visualize. Stephen Covey says, know where you're going. You have to figure out where you are going. We say, I had every one of my class members, we always go through the Brian Tracy thing. David, where are you? We do the Brian Tracy that I learned from David. Gave me a tape. Great tape. 15 steps you have to go through. Write it down. Only 3% of the world ever sit down and write out what are your goals. What is your promised land that you know God wants you to do? Down here. And say, I think God wants me to, whatever that is. I think you all know what some of mine are. And then you write down, what are the obstacles? What are the giants that are keeping you from there? And you begin to visualize finishing, going to the end in mind. I read in Sports Illustrated this week that Kevin Durant, 10 years in the NBA, maybe the number one or number two best players for many, many years, 7 feet tall, fantastic player. But he never won. He finally goes and plays with the Golden State Warriors. And finally, he's at the last game. He's been scoring 35 points a game. And he gets up in the morning and he visualized winning the game and holding the world championship trophy up. And that night, he was holding the trophy. You visualize the promised land that you want to get to. Number three, you break it down into next steps. We do this a lot here in our church. When you first hear of what the giants are, it becomes a huge thing. But if you say, no, let's go to Jericho first. And then we'll go to that town, and we'll go to that town. But you line them up, and you only do the next thing that's right in front. Cross the river. Let's do that first. They come to me, and they say, Pastor Dan, I'm going to go speak at a college in the Philippines in a couple weeks. And that college is a small little place, and they begged me to do the two dorms, boys and girls dorm. $40,000+ each one. I had nothing. And when you look at that figure, it becomes monumental. But then you break it down into small little chunks, and you figure how much per room to put in new walls and new beds and desks and windows and fan and upper and ceiling. How much? $1,000. Okay. Can anybody do one room? And my Sabbath class did a room, and someone else did a room. And before we were done, we did both dorms, and they're done, and I will be there in a couple weeks. And you do next steps, and all of a sudden it gets done. One of the stories that has changed my life is a story about a man who bought a new house. And out behind, in the acreage behind, in the woods, there was this pile of wire that someone had left there. Just this huge ball of junk fence wire. He knew what to do about it. There was no one he could hire to come and get rid of it. It just was sitting there for years. And finally, he decided to do something about it. And he got some wire cutters, and he would go on his regular 2-mile walk, and he would go there, and he would snip off one little piece of it, and he would carry that back. And every day, he snipped off a little more and snipped off a little more. And within a few weeks, the wire was gone. Next steps, next steps. Number four is manage yourself. This is a famous article by a man named D. Hawk. He was the president of Visa, and I've used this article for years. Very powerful article. Been around a long time. And he says that most of us have the idea that if I want to make any changes in the world, it depends on these other people. And I need to manage them. I have all these people underneath me, my kids, my family, my work, and I need to boss them and tell them what to do. And if they do good, then I will succeed. But it's always them. It's the boss, it's other. And he said this famous paragraph, you need to spend maybe 10 or 15% of your time dealing with the boss who is above you, making sure he knows and you're with him. 10-15% of your time are the people on either side of you. You need to manage them and stay connected to them, and you're working together, 10 or 15%. Then he said, underneath you, we think 90%. He said 10 or 15%, 20%. Managing all your employees, your kids, your family, whatever it is that's underneath you. But then he said, spend 50% of your time managing yourself. 50%. That's all you can deal with is you. So if you're standing on the side of the banks of the river and you know there's your promised land, don't just focus on them and the giants and what they need to be doing. Focus on yourself. And you read and you study and you get better and you get in shape and you work out and you get mentors in your life and you grow yourself and you get full of God. And as you manage yourself and you become the person you ought to be, the leadership will go automatically and giants will begin to go away. And you can claim your promised land. I don't know if you were standing on the banks today somewhere. I am. And the temptation is there to just stay where you are. We're not in Egypt. We came out of Egypt. Yes, we are. We're not in Egypt anymore. We're here. We are in church and we are followers of God. But God says, I've got one more level at least I want you to get to. And there is a promised land. It might be a different job. It might be a book you want to write. It might be something in your family that needs to get better. Whatever it is, God has another promised land. But there's giants in the way. Some parts of it are hard. And God says, don't just stand there. I will give it to you. I will fight the battle for you. And God is calling you to step in and to do something with it. I came back from the Philippines. And we had done two mission trips back to back. And they were huge. And there was a lot. And I was tired of having to risk and wait for God to do something more. I think I totaled it up. I was shocked myself to total it up. And we raised something like $125,000 for the Philippine trip. It's fantastic, all the different people that gave from all over the country. And I came back and I was tired and we're sitting at a staff meeting. And I said to Pastor Sarah, how's it going with Brazil? Shouldn't have asked. He says, not good, Pastor Dan. All the energy has been for Vietnam and for the Philippines. What's left for Brazil? These are kids, Pastor Dan. They can't write a check for their ticket. So I said, how much do we owe? When do we have to give it? Like 3 weeks away, Pastor Dan. $20,000 more we don't have. I knew nobody that had any money. Everything that had been given, people have given to make a difference over there. And it was tempting to stand on a shore and to say, I don't want to deal with any more giants. I don't want to fight any more battles. I've done enough giants already. Enough already, Pastor Sarah. You take care of it. Let someone else go with it. I want to be done. One voice. But the other voice says, Pastor Dan, it's always been this way. It's always been standing on the banks. And God says, come on over. And he says, step in. And I'll open the gates for you. And so I said with Sarah, let's break it down. What do we need? How many people? What can we do? Car washes. What can we do? We can take an offering. Talk to two or three people. Each person can give this much. And I believe today, if we will help with this book and with the haystack lunch, we will have enough for 30 young people to go to Brazil. Amen? And those giants will be gone. Wednesday, five of the kids are coming here to clean the church. We believe at the end of that night, hopefully Carmen will have all the money. She's doing the records. And another group of giants will be down. And our young people will go to Brazil. And they'll be on the boat that you just saw. And they will do the mission trip. It's always like that. You step in. And God says, I will give you this land. I will fight the battle for you. If you'll just go across, if you'll just step in, if you'll just march around the city, if you'll just play your trumpet, I will fight the battle for you. I will give you the victory, and you will have this land for the glory of God. Stay with us as we go through these passages, and we look at Jericho and Ai and Gideon and Jephthah and all these other giants, and the one who smashed the stake through the guy's head, and these great stories of Joshua and Judges. and may be a blessing to you and give you the courage to step in and cross a river and kill a few giants for God and claim your promised land for God. God bless you all.